Welcome, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, and I hope you're staying happy, healthy, and safe. It's a big show, so let's get right at it. Later on, we'll meet Caitlin Cronenberg. Now, chances are you've seen her still photographs in everything from Vogue Italia and Marie Claire to Esquire and Variety. She's now following in the footsteps of her famous father, David Cronenberg, and brother, Brandon Cronenberg, as she directs her feature film debut, Humane. In the darkly humorous movie, a family dinner erupts into chaos when a father's plan to enlist in the government's new euthanasia program goes really sideways. That's a little bit later on. First, let's get to know novelist and writing coach Heidi Reimer. Her front row seat to the theater world of her debut novel, The Mother Act, began 2 decades ago when she met and married an actor, and her immersion in motherhood began when she adopted a toddler and discovered she was pregnant on the same day. It's an incredible story. We'll get to know Heidi and find out how she knew she wanted to be a writer when she was just 8 years old. Heidi Reimer joined me via Zoom from her home in a small town on the St. Lawrence River. You were 8 years old when you told your mother that you wanted to be a writer. How did you know?
I loved to read. I thought immersing in a novel was the best thing in the world. And what could be better than immersing as the creator of these characters and their stories? So it started pretty early for me that I loved to read and wanted to make this myself.
And what kind of books were you reading? Were you reading books for eight-year-olds, or were you reading things that your parents might have been reading? And that's what I did. I kind of skipped through the young adult stuff and went right into the adult stuff.
Yes, I read anything I could get my hands on. I was that kid. In fact, I remember joining a reading club at my school and being so offended. I was maybe six, so offended at the baby books they were giving me to read. So yes, I read whatever was in the house. I read a lot of Judy Blume. Was really inspired by "Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret." At a certain point. First novel I wrote was kind of a blatant copy of that when I was pretty little. So
this is your debut novel, but you've been writing for some time. You've been writing short stories and that kind of thing. Tell me a little bit about the path through to the novel.
It was a long path. It is my debut novel, and it's not the first novel I've written. I don't think that's an uncommon story. It certainly felt at the time that it was taking me a very long time, given that I'd been actively working toward this since I was 8 years old. And so I wrote all through my teens. I wrote my first what I considered grown-up novel in my early 20s, 21 or so. I finished it. And it took me a long time to find my way. The first novel was not publishable. I didn't try to bring it to market. I just understood that myself, that it wasn't ready. Once I became, we'll say an adult and was trying to take it really seriously, it got a lot harder for me. I got in my own way a lot in a way that I didn't as a kid. I think that's common too. When you're a kid, it's just, this is fun and playful. And so the first novel that I completed all the way, full revision, okay, this is ready. I got an agent with it. And then she took it out and it didn't sell to publishers. So that was a point at which I thought, okay, I'm finally launching, and then it didn't happen. And then I was already at work on The Mother Act. So I think that's always the antidote to those creative and professional disappointments is have your energy in something else. And The Mother Act was what I had my energy in by then. And it was coming together. So that was then the first book that sold. And that is coming out this month.
And it feels to me like The Mother Act is kind of a merging of a number of different interests of yours. So clearly there's an interest in theater here. So tell me a little bit about that and how it might have fed into the writing of The Mother Act.
Definitely. Theater comes to me by way of marriage. My husband is an actor and theater director. It's what he has done all his life since he was a child. He was born into a theater family in the UK. And so it wasn't something that I was exposed to much. before I met him. In fact, I think the first professional theater I saw was the show where I first laid eyes on him. He was playing Benedict in Much Ado About Nothing at a summer theater festival. And so, so I was immersed in this life that was quite foreign to me and fascinating to me, and that I didn't know very much about. He was based in New York City at the time, and I was from Northern Ontario. I grew up in the bush. This was not my world.
You're listening to Heidi Reimer on The Richard Krause Show. Her novel, The Mother Act, is available wherever fine books are sold.
But I had always, of course, longed for art and creativity, and that had been always my quest. And it was one of the big things that we bonded over early on was that we both were people who needed to create. We had different mediums. And so everything I then went on to learn about the life of an actor and putting on shows, it was all through the front row seat that I had by virtue of our relationship.
You grew up in a religious movement that valued motherhood as woman's highest calling. I'm sure that that must have had an effect on your later life. So tell me a little bit about that, reconciling the idea of the way that you grew up, then becoming an author, working in the arts, which I'm sure was, there probably weren't a lot of other writers in your family or artists or actors and that sort of thing.
There weren't. I mean, my parents valued books and music. There was a lot of music in our home. And so that was always there, but I didn't know another real life writer. Mm-hmm. And that was something, and that's a big thing, like having models of what's possible. And all of the women I knew growing up were mothers, and that was their vocation. That's what they were doing with their lives. I don't really think I had maybe two examples of women who even earned money because it was the belief was that women were, you know, meant to raise the children, and lots of them. And so that was a struggle for me to decide if I actually wanted to be a mother at all, because I didn't know how to do that. And also be faithful to this goal and dream and need that I had to write. It took a while to figure out the reconciliation of those two things. Yeah,
was it a difficult decision?
I was definitely went through periods of trying to figure out my life, trying to figure out how to earn a living is one thing, because you can have a desire to write and you can be actively writing, but to actually pay bills with it, that can take, I mean, you know, that can take a very long time or never happen at all. So part of it is that, just the need to, once I was out in the world, earn a living. I really thought long and hard about whether I wanted to become a mother. I went through some lengthy periods when I thought that it was not something that I wanted in my life. I was never as strong on it as my character Sadie Jones is. She's pretty adamant that she's not going to become a parent. It was something that I was more interested in it than Sadie is, but I also really felt I needed to weigh the costs and whether it was possible to do both of these things.
And you had this idea for a book, or for this book, a very long time ago, and it kind of gestated for a while. Tell me a little bit about the original idea, what perhaps inspired it, and then how it changed and grew in your head.
Yes, I had the idea. I was a young mother. I had a toddler and a baby. My actor husband was away a lot working to support us. And I was on my own for long stretches of time, a full-time stay-at-home mother, sort of very mired in domesticity and struggling a lot with that, really with the loss of my creative identity, with my intellectual life, with just being able to like go meet a friend for coffee easily, and those kinds of things. And I was working on a different novel, and it had a mother character in it who was less than exemplary. And I found myself increasingly empathizing with her and understanding some of the bad mother choices she had made, one of which was to walk out. But in that particular novel, we never heard her voice or saw her perspective. It was all from the daughter's point of view. Mm-hmm. And becoming a mother really gave me another lens through which to view this relationship and which to understand just how much motherhood can ask of a human being. And I wanted to give voice to both sides of that equation, because of course the desire that I sometimes felt to walk out the door and go back to my former self would have repercussions on my daughters that I didn't want that, obviously, but imaginatively to explore it from both sides. Okay, the mother does walk out, and then the daughter is dealing with the fallout. They're both dealing with the fallout. So we see it from both their perspectives. And I always wanted to show both sides. The idea came to me with the construction of the opening night of this solo show that tells the story of their relationship. And so I knew that from the beginning. I knew that the characters were actors. I didn't know exactly what parts of their story to tell because we sort of zoom in on these seasons of their lives. And I didn't get those quite right the first time through. And so I had to go back. I abandoned it at one point. I thought that it wasn't viable the way I'd structured it.
Well, the structure is complicated because it takes place in one night, and yet it spans decades, and there's different chronologies that happen and things. So it's a complicated book in that sense. Did you have a wall with all those little post-it notes on it where you're trying to keep things straight?
There is a wall. Yes, yeah. It's right there. Because it is very complicated. And I wasn't always sure that it was possible to do it as I'd conceived of it. And partly because you know right from the beginning what happened mm-hmm. in the past. And so you know that Sadie, the mother, left Jude, the daughter, when she was a toddler. And so how to write a book where you're reading to discover how and why rather than what, sort of the narrative propulsion of that got complicated at certain points when I, and so I had to figure that out. I had to make that work.
Well, you're figuring out why they're still estranged, even though Sadie has come back into Jude's life. You have to figure out why are they still estranged? And I guess is that the mystery at the heart of it?
I think, yes, there's two. So Jude's sections are heading toward the answer to the question of why are they estranged now? And then Sadie's are in the more distant past, and they're heading toward the question of how and why did Sadie walk out when Jude was a toddler? So there's those, yes, two strands of that mystery. Where you know the what, but not the how or the why.
So tell me about creating characters that are opposed to one another in a lot of ways, but we still, I mean, you don't want people skipping over parts of the book because they don't like Jude or Sadie. So how do you create empathy, I guess, for each of these characters?
Yes, I do think that's always the challenge with dual points of view in a novel is it's common to sort of like or be rooting for one character over the other. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to give equal weight to them both. And I wanted them, even though they're very different, I wanted you to really be inside them and under their skin. And I wanted no judgment. You know, the more challenging character in that regard was Sadie, the mother, because she's a mother who left her kid. Mm-hmm. Like we judge that. It's sort of one of the final taboos for a woman that you just can't come back from an action like that. So I wanted to be able to have a character who does something that drastic and that despicable, and I wanted the reader to be on her side, and that seemed like a big challenge.
You're listening to Heidi Reimer on The Richard Krauss Show. Her novel, The Mother Act, is available wherever fine books are sold.
And also, it was really important to me not to be have like an authorial judgment on her. I wanted to explore why and how this would happen. That's what I endeavored to do.
How does your actor husband feel about the portrayal of actors in the book?
When he read it the first time, he said the psychology, it was scarily astute. He thought that I nailed the just what it's like to be inside an actor's head on a stage. And I feel it's a little bit of a tribute to him. I think he sees it that way. I've dedicated the book to him. It wouldn't exist without him. I borrowed little details from his life, though the actor, the husband, father, actor character isn't him, but there are some parallels to his life. And so I think it's special. He sees it as an honor, just the fact that we've lived this life, this creative, sometimes really difficult life together. It's hard to earn a living. It's hard to raise a family in a non-normal job situation and income situation. And so the fact that I have made art from his art, I think is really moving for both of us.
And are you working on something right now?
I am. I have a novel coming out. That my second novel will be coming out with Random House Canada. Again, I'm in editorial with the same editor on that. And so taking a little pause now as we launch The Mother Act, but that's my next major project is to finish those edits.
Right. So do you write every day? Are you back at it? Is it a full-time job in a sense for you in that not all writers write every single day? I do. I write something every day because I think that it is a muscle that needs to be flexed and it gets stronger the more that you use it. And just like when you don't go to the gym, you can get a little flabby. And so I try and write every single day, but not everybody does. I know lots of writers who are like, nope, taking the next 6 months off to recharge and then I dip back in.
No, I'm with you. I am like you. I need it. I'm not my best self without it. Just in terms of my capacity to handle the other parts of life, it might not be that I'm really sinking in and being greatly productive every day, but my practice is to touch in with it.
Well, Heidi, thank you so much. Pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this.
That was Heidi Reimer on The Richard Krauss Show. Check out her new book, The Mother Act. It's available wherever you buy fine books. Let's get to know Caitlin Cronenberg. As a photographer, her work has appeared in everything from Harper's Bazaar to the New York Times, and she shot the cover and album art for Drake's 4-time platinum Grammy-nominated record Views. She's also directed music videos and short films, including The Endings, based on her best-selling celebrity photo book of the same name, and The Death of David Cronenberg, which we'll talk about just a little bit later on. Humane marks her feature directorial debut. Taking place over a single day, just months after a global ecological collapse has forced world leaders to take extreme measures to reduce the Earth's population, Humane sees a recently retired newsman invite his grown children to dinner to announce his intentions to enlist in the nation's new euthanasia program. But, and there's a big but here, when the father's plan goes sideways, tensions flare and chaos erupts among his children. Caitlin Cronenberg joined me via Zoom. Around the time that you received the script for Humane, you say that your agents were sending you lots of scripts to, quote, take my temperature on what kind of filmmaker I thought I wanted to be. What were you looking for, generally speaking, around that time?
I think that people in general think that I will sort of follow directly in the footsteps of my other director family members. And I was receiving a lot of straight horror movies and body horror movies. And you know, there are wonderful movies in those genres, but they didn't necessarily spark with me as something that felt like the film that I had inside of me. I really love depth of character. I love a great story. I love a good backstory. And when I first read Humane, it had all of those things for me. A really unique concept that I hadn't read anything like before. You know, it wasn't an adaptation, which again, no shade on adaptations mm-hmm. because a lot of them are wonderful, but I really wanted something that I could sink my teeth into and go deep on. And that was this.
And I think one of the things that makes this movie so compelling is that it is partially a horror film in a way. It's a thriller for sure, but it's really more than anything a social drama, a family drama that takes place by and large in one day. And I think that horror and thrillers are a great way to tell stories because they can be very specific and yet really universal at the same time. And I think Humane does that in its depiction of how families can fall apart under stress.
Absolutely. I think that the idea of a family drama set in a, you know, a kind of an unnatural world situation is such an interesting way to sort of observe a family dynamic and understand what families are like, because, you know, of course, we can relate to certain aspects of how these families relate to each other, even if we can't exactly relate to the outside pressures that are happening in the, mm-hmm. in the world of Humane. But that is really the thing that drew me to it, because it isn't about the global environmental collapse. You feel that. You feel that that's there. You know that that's the setting. But really, this is a family drama with siblings who have had a complicated relationship growing up. And I find that really fascinating. And then it's bloody also.
And it takes place in one day. And does that make it easier as a director or more difficult to make sure that it feels, you have to feel the passage of time, but it takes place in a fairly condensed pocket of time, 2 or 3 hours, I think. So tell me a little bit about creating that.
Well, in terms of, you know, separating the early stages of the film from the mm-hmm. latter part of the film, there was a lot of discussion about lighting design. And I believe that, you know, the light took us through the first phase, through this sort of transitional moment with the sunset and then into the darker evening hours. But I will tell you that the biggest challenge is continuity mm-hmm. Over the course of the film, especially when you're shooting out of order, which often you just have to do. So we would refer to it as blood levels and say, okay, well, Alana's at blood level 2, you know, Emily's at blood level 1. Okay, wait, Rico was just punched in the previous scene, but that was 3 days ago. So he needs, you know, a little bit. Thankfully I have had an incredible detail oriented crew who every department needed to be aware of what blood level we were on. And, that was really, really hard to keep track of.
You're listening to Caitlin Cronenberg on The Richard Krause Show. Her new film, Humane, is in theaters right now.
But in terms of passage of time, I felt like that was already on the page. We knew what was going to sort of pull us through. And, you know, having the ability to cut back outside to the RV and kind of interact with Mia and Bob, that helped us with the pacing as well. It was really those blood levels. It's like, when did he get stabbed?
I love the idea of blood levels. I've heard Ken Russell told me one time that when he was working specifically with Oliver Reed, who was known to be able to play very subtle roles and very over-the-top roles, he had a numerical scale that he used with him. And it would literally be like, give me an 8 on this one, Ollie. Give me a 9 or whatever it might be. And it seemed to work very well.
When you develop a shorthand with your cast and crew in that way, it just makes everything more efficient. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we had 20 days to shoot this film, and that's really tight. And it was a lot of action for 20 days. I'm incredibly proud of what we pulled off, but you definitely get close very quickly, and the ability to communicate with as little as possible is helpful.
Hi, I'm Bob.
It's them!
Oh, they're early.
You're not gonna like this, but we're here to collect two bodies.
I already told you Dawn left.
And that's unfortunate. But the rules are the same for everybody.
Tell me a little bit about establishing the tone of this. After I saw the movie, I emailed Enrico Colantoni and said, that character Bob should have his own film. I would watch an entire film of Bob. But he has some lighter moments. The film is very funny by times, and a lot of it comes with Enrico, but it's about something very serious. So tell me about finding the tone.
Well, again, like the tone is set out on the page. Mm-hmm. The script had a lot of very funny moments. I laughed a lot reading it. I know Michael Spiraga, who wrote it, mm-hmm. very, very well, and I understand his sense of humor and how it relates to my sense of humor. So a lot of it was there for us. But it was really truly in the casting, because when you cast comedic actors who are also able to play serious roles, you get what you need, mm-hmm. in so many different ways. And so, you know, the character of Bob was actually written for Rico by Michael. Oh, wow. Michael and Rico had been there before. I actually shot Rico's wedding. Like we go way back. But you know, you know what you're going to get with your actors. And then when you give them the space to really lean into their characters and explore who the characters are and their humanity, you get this incredible result. And I think that both as a first-time director, but also as a photographer, I have to put so much trust into my actors, because they've been on way more sets than I have. And, you know, I set the world for them. I give them their direction. We talk. But at the end of the day, these are professional actors. Their job is to act. And what a relief I felt that I didn't have to do that part of it. I didn't just set the scene and let it play out in front of me and just be entertained by it. But I think that tonally, a lot came together in the edit as well, in terms of where we wanted to be with the humor. Mm-hmm. I certainly wanted to show a full range of human experience and emotion from these characters. People are funny inherently. And in dark times, people use humor as a defense mechanism. So I think that giving the actors the opportunity to explore the entire breadth of their emotion was really important.
You talked about having other elements introduced into this idea, one of which was dialogue. And it made me think of the short film that you made, The Death of David Cronenberg, starring your father, which has no dialogue, but is so effective. It's a really haunting short film, and it's very short. It's a minute or two long, but man, it has images that will stay with you.
Sure, they sure do. If you've never seen your dad get into bed with a corpse of himself, yeah. Like, have you even lived?
How did your experience as a photographer, both as a set photographer and a fashion photographer and all sorts of other disciplines you've worked in, instill photography? How did that play into your work as a director on Humane?
It really made me want to find a director of photography who understood me and where I was coming from, which I did in Doug Coe, who gets as excited about beautiful lighting as I do in this like nerdy, hilarious, dorky way. Doug and I worked for weeks and weeks together discussing every single possibility, every lighting test, every quality of light in every room. And that was so important to me, because I am such a visual person, visuals first. So I really needed to be able to feel like what I was making was going to be beautiful in every still frame should be able to be pulled out and be a beautiful photograph. And that's, you know, I think I come from a background where I depend so much on one frame to tell the entire story. So it's almost daunting to have more tools to tell the story with, dialogue, movement. I don't get that from photography. So there is a level of nerves that I felt sort of being given more tools than I knew what to do with. But again, I put my trust in my actors. I put my trust in Doug. And just the result is what I consider to be a very beautiful film. And I want people to absorb the visual you know, it, I think if you can feel the direction, you're doing it wrong. Mm. You just want to experience it. I don't want people to notice it. I just want them to experience it.
Tell me a little bit about avoiding being in any way preachy here. There's a great quote from you that says, listen, I don't want to teach a lesson with this movie. There's enough of this, even though it's about environmental difficulties and climate change and that sort of thing. How did you sort of dance around that? And again, I guess it all goes back to Michael Sparaga's script, but expand a little bit if you could.
I mean, you just don't do it. Right? Like it's easier to not teach a lesson than it is to teach a lesson. Right. Again, like our, you know, so much time and energy went into the world building. You know, if you read anything that's on any screen in the film, it's all written by Michael specifically to bring, you know, to move the plot forward. The Chiron's on the news screen. Every single word that is shown, he wrote with the world building in mind. And I think that, you know, again, we're setting the scene for a family drama. We understand as human beings, if you have had your eyes open in the last decade, you understand what is happening to the environment. It is not for me to teach. And I don't enjoy watching movies that preach to me because I think we have to give our audiences some credit as well to say, you know, if you understand what's going on in the world, you'll enjoy this in a different way.
You're listening to Caitlin Cronenberg on The Richard Krauss Show. Her film Humane is in theaters right now.
If you have no idea that climate change is happening, maybe you watched some news before you watch this movie. Mm-hmm. I go to a movie or I watch a movie for escapism. I want to be entertained. And that's the kind of movie that I want to make. I know lots of people enjoy movies that teach them lessons and that have sort of more appropriate or purposeful lessons that are being taught. And I can enjoy a film like that as well. But with a horror or a thriller genre film, I want to be entertained. That's it.
You've spent a great deal of time on sets as a set photographer. Your father, of course, is David Cronenberg. Your brother is Brandon Cronenberg. I would imagine that you've been on their sets as well. Tell me what was different about it being your set on this particular film.
People bring you snacks when you're the director. So that's awesome. You also have to carry less gear when you're the director, and that part is also awesome. It's a lot of fun to be on my father and brother's sets, but I'm there working. I'm a photographer for them, and I enjoy being able to be part of the things that they're building. My eyes well up and I feel full of pride when I see my family members excelling and doing the things that they love. I think that's true of anyone doing any job that they love. You feel pride and you feel excited because they're happy. That's what supportive family members do. So, you know, when I'm on my own set, I have one focus, and my focus is to make the best film that I can possibly make. And when I'm on their sets, it's to support them in the projects that they're making. I will say that being a still photographer on set is very different than being a director in terms of the way that people enjoy having you around, to say it in a nice way. They're not necessarily the most beloved crew members. So being a director is a little bit different in that way. But, you know, at the same time, I think it's important to experience different sets, different people, different directing styles, and in order to understand the way that it feels to be a crew member who's lower on the food chain, gives you a different perspective for sure.
And tell me a little bit about the editing process of this film. It's elegant and it is spare, I think, is a fair word to use. I just loved how it motors along. It did not feel to me like there was any wasted time in this movie. Did you discover things about the story in the editing room that might not have been obvious when you were first shooting? Although maybe when you're shooting in 20 days, you have to do much more prep at the beginning of the process rather than sort of at the end. But how did that work for you?
I will admit that I found the editing process really daunting. Having that be my first experience with a real proper major edit, I had a very hard time at first trying to figure out what I was trying to say, because there are so many options. I do well with so many options. I like having a plan and knowing what we're doing. And so often in the editing room, it would be like, okay, well, we can try that. Oh yeah, we'll try that. We'll try that and see how it goes. And then we'll watch it and we'll see that. We'll try that. And that made my head spin. When you have guidance of great editors, you put your trust into them too. And you understand that you're never going to hate your movie as much as the first time you see it cut together. And you know, that is actually a time when I called my brother and I said, I made a movie. It's terrible. It's a horrible thing. But that was when we edited it together as it's written in the script.
And what did he say? What advice?
He said, yep. That's right. You're never going to hate it as much as you hate it in this moment. It'll get better. You do magic in the editing room. Everyone kept saying you do magic in the editing room. I have no idea what they were talking about until we actually did it. We did magic.
That was Caitlin Cronenberg. Her great new film, Humane, is now playing in a theater near you. Check it out. It's really good. Big thanks to Caitlin for stopping by to talk about her film. A big thanks to Heidi Reimer. You can find her book, The Mother Act. It's available wherever you buy fine books. But of course, as always, my biggest thanks goes to you for listening. I'm Richard Krause. Stay happy, stay healthy, stay safe, stay weird. We'll talk to you again soon.